From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the Wildcast Podcast. I'm Justin Spears, as always, my partner in crime, sitting beside me, Dominic Pacheco. We are here talking strictly Arizona basketball because Arizona basketball never stops, Dom.
It's that time of year. It never stops.
We're going to chime in on Bruce Pasco. He's all the way out in Chicago covering the NBA Draft Combine. Some interesting stuff coming out of Chicago. Pretty interesting the last week because what was the last podcast we had? It was about basketball recruiting.
Yeah, it was right before Jordan Brown committed.
A lot has happened. By the way, if you didn't know, Jordan Brown chose Nevada over Arizona. But that, of course, that's old news. What we're talking about here, the Phoenix Suns land the lottery pick for the first time in franchise history. It is a no-brainer that they should pick DeAndre Ayton at number one overall. Will they pick DeAndre Ayton number one overall? Like, look, I've seen many NBA drafts, as you have. It just seems like
I'd like to point out.
Yeah, true that. It just seems like there should be no question that DeAndre Ayton is the number one overall pick because he's 7'1", 260 pounds. He runs the floor like a guard. He can play like a guard sometimes, but he can also play like an absolute beast in the post. He is a unicorn. He is a guy that's going to be, as a lot of people have said it, a once-in-a-generational type of player. I see Joel Embiid with Dwight Howard's shoulders when I look at DeAndre Ayton. However, Phoenix Suns' new head coach, Igor Kokoskov from Serbia, coached potential number one overall pick, Luka Doncic, in Slovenia for the national team. And now people are thinking, hey, this guy is familiar with Luka Doncic. He's a 6'8 European sensation. They have to consider picking this guy.
Well, but and by the way, Doncic has, you know, isn't 100% sold on the NBA draft. He came out and said the other day that, what did he say exactly? I don't have the quote up in front of me, but said he might, you know, he's considering staying overseas. Which, okay, fine, you're considering staying overseas until these NBA GMs come in and start waving all this money at you. Not that he's not making it over there, but when you have a chance to come play in the NBA, he's going to take it. And I anticipate him being right there in the conversation with DeAndre Ayton up till draft day. The interesting part is, you look at Kokoskov and, you know, it wouldn't be an entire shock if he went out and picked Doncic. I think everyone agrees, at least in Tucson, everyone has came to a consensus that Ayton is the number one pick. Listen to what Suns GM Ryan McDonough had to say about Ayton after the Suns got the number one pick. Quote, "The story with Ayton is that he's just a phenomenal physical specimen." I feel like we've heard that so many times in so many quotes. This coming from the number one pick in the NBA draft, though, their GM. Quote, "He has everything you look for physically in terms of size, strength, length, and athleticism." He continues on that the rest of that quote and that story from Bruce Pasco is online, seen and heard at the NBA Combine at Tucson.com. But look, they're high on Ayton. I mean, for as much as this is going to be called into question over the next month, the Suns don't have anything against DeAndre Ayton.
Oh, no.
And, I mean, I think they recognize him as one of the top players in the draft. I just don't know if they're giving him... I mean, this guy, he... Look, if you're looking for a guy to draft right away, to come in and have an instant impact on your team, like next year, contribute right away, game one, give you a chance to win more games, I don't think there's a guy better than DeAndre Ayton. I think he is the most talented player in the draft all around in every aspect. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's been a better... And again, we've been saying this for... You know, all season and in the recruiting season a year and a half ago. So we've been saying it forever, but now that it's just on the stage of NBA, there's never been a better prospect out of the state of Arizona. There hasn't been a better NBA prospect out of college in years. I'm trying to think. I mean, Anthony Davis maybe was a really high prospect. You knew he was going to be a special NBA player. There aren't a lot of guys who can bring as much to a team as DeAndre Ayton can. And for as great as Luka Doncic might be, he might be the best European prospect of all time, but I don't see him having more upside than DeAndre Ayton.
Yeah.
I mean, from a career standpoint or from, you know, who's contributing next year, who's bringing your team to the playoffs. You and I talked about this earlier today, and I think it's interesting. If you pick one team that DeAndre Ayton fits into most, and I guess you could say this about most players because of who's coaching the team, I look at the San Antonio Spurs and think if DeAndre Ayton's there, man, he's as close to as a for sure Hall of Famer as you can possibly get at stage one of his career. Because you team up him with Greg Popovich, that is insane. Mm-hmm. And the reason I bring that up is because Rand McDonough today said he is open to trading the Suns' number one overall pick, first in franchise history. Justin, are they going to do it?
Man, they are going to do it. You know they're going to do it. I know they're going to do it. And I was thinking about it today. You know, if the Suns are willing to get a veteran player that can make an immediate impact. Kawhi Leonard.
Whispers Kawhi.
It makes way too much sense because, one, Kawhi Leonard doesn't want to play there. And, two, the Spurs already came out and said, look, unless you're going to give us a home run package, we're not dealing Kawhi Leonard. DeAndre Ayton is a home run package, if you ask me. You could even deal Kawhi Leonard and maybe their first round pick. Mm-hmm. If the Spurs are really that high on DeAndre Ayton, again, their first-round pick, I think they're sitting at 17 right now. Mm-hmm. Hello, you could trade the 17th pick and Kawhi Leonard. If you're the Suns, you could consider it because, one, it's Kawhi Leonard. He's one of the best two-way players in the league. Mm-hmm. And two, we also get a first-round pick where we could draft a center. And a lot of people sleep on the middle of the first round of the NBA draft. Again, I understand he was a lottery, but Donovan Mitchell was taken at 13. And Donovan Mitchell looks like he's one of the best rookies in this class.
Well, speaking of pick number 13, and this is one of the trade scenarios I tossed around when as the lottery was happening. I got Greg Popovich on the mind now. The Clippers own picks 12 and 13. They're the only other team with two picks in the top 15, right?
Yeah.
Now that I say that, I second-guess myself. So they're the only team with two picks in the top 15. They could say, hey, we'll give you DeAndre Jordan, who's on the back end of a pricey contract. We'll give you DeAndre Jordan and picks 12 and 13. Do you take it if you're the Suns? I don't think it's enough, personally. I think DeAndre Ayton has more upside than anyone they're going to get at 12 and 13, even packaged with DeAndre Jordan. I think DeAndre Ayton has that much upside. But I think that's interesting. I think it's worth the Clippers making a call. I mean, what do you think? Do you think that's too much for DeAndre Ayton?
You know what? I mean, that's a tough one because, you know, picks 12 and 13 plus DeAndre Jordan. You add
DeAndre Jordan.
And you have your shot blocking big to match up with Josh Jackson and Devin Booker. Mm-hmm. And then with that 12 and 13 pick, you could even get, with that 12th pick, you get a point guard. I'm trying to think of some point guards.
Names, yeah, Aaron Holiday, but he's probably going to go later in the first round.
Yeah, you know, you can cross your fingers and hope that Colin Sexton falls, and you can have a lineup of Colin Sexton, Devin Booker, Josh Jackson, DeAndre Jordan, and then with that other pick, you can pick a four. That and then you have so many young players. Plus, you have can't believe I'm saying this, but you have Dragan Bender coming back. You still have Elfrid Payton, who's kind of somewhat made a career in the NBA, cut off his hair, by the way. He doesn't have that goofy hair anymore. Yeah.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
I mean, there's just so many things you can do if you're the Phoenix Suns. But again, you know, this is a little bit biased because we've seen him play every week during the college basketball season when DeAndre Jordan is. If I'm the Phoenix Suns, I don't even accept anything. I'm cutting off my phone lines. I'm saying, hey, we are picking DeAndre Ayton, number one overall. No questions about it.
You would almost want him to make it known. Like, if I was Ryan McDonough right now, I'd come out and say, we're probably picking DeAndre Ayton.
Yeah.
But look, they're going to see what they have on the table. Obviously, people are going to be calling for number one pick. I think the Clippers are a good option, even throwing one of those picks. I mean, again, DeAndre Jordan is, you know, as I said, the back end of a contract. He's due $24 million this year, I believe, and then he's an unrestricted free agent next year. So that would obviously have to work itself out. You're not going to go 12-13 in a $24 million contract for DeAndre Ayton. There's going to be other pieces involved. Maybe not both draft picks are involved, but the Clippers are an option. I think the Spurs and Kawhi Leonard are a great option. When you think of other teams, I mean, does anyone else come to mind when you're thinking of, okay, what other veteran player could the Suns be interested in to kind of bait them away from taking DeAndre Ayton? Kawhi Leonard's the first player that comes to my mind, obviously.
Yeah. And you know what? I mean, there's a lot of teams you could throw out there. And another team that I was thinking about was the Boston Celtics. I mean, think about how great they've been playing with all of their young pieces. I don't know if they'd be willing to trade a Kyrie Irving to Phoenix.
Back to Cleveland.
Look, there's just a lot of scenarios that could be thrown at the Suns. I don't blame Ryan McDonough for keeping his options open. But at the same time, I'm like, dude, come on, man.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, he talked so highly about what that number one overall pick means. He called it an accomplishment. Remember, this is a team who had to have their worst season since they became an expansion
team.
You
tanked.
Yeah, I mean, he called it an accomplishment to get the number one overall pick. It's okay, sure, you could be happy about it, but it's certainly not an accomplishment. I want to make that clear, what you had to do in order to get the number one overall pick. I don't.
I was just saying, in all fairness, usually they've had like the second or third worst record in the league, and they end up with like the fifth pick.
Right. So
they always get screwed in the lottery.
Right.
So maybe this is a
compliment. So like, okay, be a little happy you got the number one pick, but I don't know if I want to go as far to saying it's an accomplishment. You didn't accomplish anything. You had the worst season you've ever had in your franchise's history to get the number one overall pick. But no, I don't dock him for going out and saying he's shopping it, or not even saying he's shopping it, just saying they're open to trades. Because that's how they're going to get the phone ringing, and you're going to get the Spurs calling, you're going to get the Clippers calling. I was thinking of Mike Conley because I've heard teams still looking at him. He's probably too old, at least in my book. I'm not making any huge blockbuster trades with him. He might be a more sought out free agent, but
he's also got a hefty contract that's really difficult to pick up.
Right, a hefty contract as an old player who's coming off another injury prone season. So I don't trust Mike Conley.
Yeah.
Especially not for a guy like Ayton. Look, I think our bottom line is Ayton's the number one overall pick. Whether it's the Suns. Whether that pick gets traded to someone else, I think everyone should be after Ayton.
Oh yeah,
even the Kings. I'd love to see him fall to the Kings. I think the Kings could use him, utilize him. I know you think that they'd screw it up one way or another, and I don't disagree with you. Shout out to my brother Tony out there in Sacramento. But look, he would fit in with pretty much any team because he's so versatile. He can do literally anything you ask him to, and he's going to do it better than most people, really anyone in the draft. So you can throw names like Doncic or like Marvin Bagley in there, like, okay, yeah, these guys could be viable number one overall picks, but not when they're in the same draft as DeAndre Ayton.
Mm-hmm. I think Shaquille O'Neal would help us out and send DeAndre Ayton to the Lakers if he were to get sent to the Kings.
Oh, man.
So, just saying.
No way that happens.
No. That's a dream scenario.
Let's be clear. That's a Justin Spears dream scenario, not actual plausible scenario.
All right, well, let's go out to Bruce Pasco out in Chicago. Let's get him in. And we're here with Arizona Daily Star basketball beat writer Bruce Pasco. Bruce is actually out in Chicago at the NBA Draft Combine. Bruce, I know it's raining out there and it's pretty late over where you're at, but thanks for hopping on the podcast with us.
Sure. Happy to be here.
Absolutely. Bruce, so first impressions, and you've been to many draft combines. Where does this one kind of differ from the others in the past? Obviously, Arizona hasn't had a number one overall pick, but DeAndre Ayton isn't participating. However, there is a lot of buzz around him. And then plus, you have guys like Raleigh Alkins, Alonzo Trier, guys that are pretty much playing to get drafted in the second round. So what are your just overall thoughts from just looking at the last couple days?
Yeah, you know, it's hard for guys like Alkins and Trier to make much of an impact here, I think, but they, I think they didn't hurt themselves. They both played better today, and so there was that, and then, yeah, DeAndre Ayton's a big topic of conversation, even though he's not here, and that's really interesting because, with the Suns having the number one pick, of course, there's a lot of speculation they're still going to go with him, but they're saying, you know, they're going to, at least look at a few different guys and, you know, all that. So there's a lot of interest in these three Arizona players. So that makes it interesting for sure.
One thing, or one of my personal favorite things about NBA Draft Combine is you hear all these players talk about their interviews with NBA teams. And your article that's currently posted on Tucson.com in the Wildcaster app talks about Raleigh Alkins and his interview process. And one of the scouts or front office executives asked him, what would you do at a yellow light? And he says, well, it depends on how far you are from
how
it.
Close
you
are.
Right?
Which, by the way, is the right answer.
It is the right answer. Like, that is the most perfect answer.
Yeah, in fact, he didn't say initially what he did. I said, well, you must run the yellow, don't you? And he looked at me like, no, I wait until I are, 2 months out of college you are, or whatever, you know. And it was pretty impressive that he thought that way. I assume it is the right answer, but I also think it's, you know, they kind of want to see how you answer it and what your thought process is or whatever, and it's all, you know, psychological stuff. And, you know, that is some of the most interesting things that come out. It's unfortunately, Alkins and Trier were both kind of didn't reveal a whole lot about what they've been asked. They were kind of downplayed it, so I don't know whether that was really the case or whether there were things they just weren't comfortable revealing or whatever, but that can be a big thing too.
Okay. In your past at the NBA Draft Combine, what is the weirdest question you've heard an NBA executive ask a player?
I remember a long time ago, Chase Budinger said that he was asked if he had benefits, or if he had friends with benefits. And that was like, you know, I think when that phrase was first start being bandied about or whatever. And just, I mean, they really try and catch you off guard with some stuff. And I think in Budinger's case, in a lot of cases, they try and find out who you are, who your friends are. What, you know, they asked him about, you know, how much did he love the game, because he was thought of as being a volleyball guy, which he is now, ironically, after, you know, having a career in the league. So there's stuff like that. I think in Trier's case, you know, I got to think that at least some of the questioning was about what he went through with his PED tests and suspensions. And, you know, he kind of said, he told me he thought that, you know, they all know what's going on. It's not a big deal. The NBA guys aren't worried about it anymore. And that may be true. I think, you know, typically the NBA guys know, you know, they hear through the grapevine what's going on, as soon as anybody knows, and they know what happened. I don't think that's being held against him, you know, as far as his NBA stock or anything like that.
Yeah.
Bruce, I wanted to talk to you about Alonzo Trier. You spoke with him today, and I have an article up on Tucson.com about how he doesn't regret playing for Arizona. I'm going to read you this quote here from him today. Quote, "I wanted to go to a school that was going to push me to become a better defender and where I could learn more about the game and be part of a culture of winning. We didn't win a national championship at Arizona, but we were able to win a lot of games and have a successful time when I was there." So the whole thing with Alonzo Trier is kind of that, you know, he's overcome all this adversity. He played at Arizona when he didn't have to. He could have came out last year and gone through this process a year ago and been drafted and already in the league. So when NBA GMs look at Alonzo Trier next month, what are they going to be looking at? Because he's been falling out of a lot of mocks, and, you know, is that because of his play on the court? And what's going to go into, you know, the decision to draft Alonzo Trier or not a month down the road?
Well, from what I understand, it's mostly about, there's questions about whether he can transition to a role in the NBA where it works, because he's not going to probably be that lead dog on the wing where he's, you know, taking a lot of shots and being the leading scorer. The NBA teams are going to need him to play, you know, on and off the ball, but maybe a lot on it, and they want to see how well he can distribute and, you know, can he be a scoring point guard. And, you know, and granted, he did improve in that way this year. You know, he basically became the backup point guard behind Parker, Jackson Cartwright this year, and, you know, because he was good enough at it that they put Barcelo on the bench. But, you know, playing in the NBA, being an NBA point guard, is a whole other level, and it's just the mentality he has too. I think there's no questions about can he adjust. He's such a hardwired DNA, whatever you want to call it, scorer. He just scores. That's what he does, and he knows he needs to distribute well. And I think he feels like he's gotten better at it. We certainly saw signs where he was a lot more efficient, especially, you know, the first half or so of last season. And but, you know, there's just questions about whether he can make that jump in the NBA and do it. But, you know, I think whether he gets drafted or not, it'll be a case of he can either make a team, or if he doesn't, he can maybe get a two-way contract and go to the G League and become that guy, and he'll have a chance to do that for, you know, for a little while and see if he can make that transition.
So does everything he went through at Arizona, does that play into, you know, these GM's decisions, or are they just looking? Because, I mean, this is the NBA we're talking about. There's 60 players who get picked in the first two rounds. You know, teams are looking for players that are going to come in and have an instant impact. They're not looking for guys that, you know, they can go out and develop and be ready to play in 3-4 years, because there's only 60 players. There's better players out there who can go be ready now. So what's the attractiveness of Alonzo Trier? Is it that he's kind of a versatile scorer, or is it that he's gone through so much at Arizona? Or, I mean, what stands out? What's your sell if you're Alonzo Trier?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think he can – certainly that's got to count for something, because he's not only an older guy, 22, but he's been through so much, and that tends to build, character and toughness and all that. And I think he's got some of that in him, and that might count for something when it comes to actually getting in the games. I think, he made the point today that, a lot of guys getting drafted, the older guys who get drafted, especially on, the fringe, are guys, sometimes those older guys get to play more. They may not have the upside, but they're more ready. And I think that could be the case depending on what situation he gets into. But, it's funny though, because if he had come out after his freshman year, or maybe even last year after the PD suspension, the way he finished strongly, it's possible he would have been a high second round pick. And now they're talking about not drafting him at all, and yet he might be more ready than he was a year or two ago. But it's one of those things. They're drafting on potential, but if he can find whether or not he gets drafted, I think he'll be able to. He might be able to help some teams, and if not, he can reinvent himself a little bit in the G League, and maybe have a quick process of it.
What does Alonzo Trier's situation say about the state of the current state of college basketball? Because you look at a guy like Alonzo Trier, and you just said it, Bruce. He could have came out last year, and he would have been a high second round pick. Where now, he might not even be drafted in a month. So, I mean, you look at these players like Alonzo Trier who can come out maybe after your first or second year, or you can stay and kind of develop and mold into the kind of NBA player you're going to be for years. But with how much is going on in college basketball right now with all the scandals, Alonzo Trier also obviously got caught up in PED suspensions twice in his 3 years at Arizona. So with so many factors playing negatively into college basketball's decision to go pro, or stay in NCAA, rather. I mean, what's that say about the state of college basketball?
Well, and Raleigh Hawkins, too. I think both of those guys, they may not say it, but you got to think that at least part of them is thinking, man, I should have left before, because not only did Trier have to go through what he went through, but then Hawkins breaks his foot, and the investigation's going on, and I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say, though. I mean, certainly it's been tough at Arizona, but it does seem like over the years, as many guys have hurt themselves staying as have helped themselves. Maybe, but, it's hard to say. I mean, you have also guys like T.J. McConnell and Solomon Hill who help themselves by sticking around, but in certain cases, guys are better off leaving, and it's hard to tell. I think, I think the thing is, though, it's really, to me, it's more about in the long run, and if you stay or whether you stay or go, where are you at, mentally, and how are you going to, stick around in the league if you're, like a guy like Kadeem Allen, who helped himself sticking around, and, I don't know whether he'll become a top-shelf NBA guy ever, but he's got the maturity, and he went in there ready mentally, and, now he just has to work on his game a little bit, and I got to think he'll get the most out of it too. So I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is I think it can help him. It can help him, maybe long term, but draft wise, it might hurt in some cases. If the guys stick around, but it's hard for Trier to say, particularly because I think in his case, he wanted to come back his sophomore year, have a full year, because he felt like he was playing really well when he broke his hand as a freshman. Then as a sophomore year, he lost his 19 games, and he's thinking, okay, I'm going to come back and have a great junior year. And then the junior year, he did play better for a lot of it, but then it tailed off. So, and in his case, it's hurting, but I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, you do wonder if now you've got, the G League being more and more of a better option, and there may be some guys really look at that. I mean, I talked to the Memphis G League coach today about Chance Comanche, and he was raving about how well he played. And Comanche's a guy who couldn't even find minutes at Arizona, and he ended up being a part time starter in the G League.
Yeah.
This is crazy. I mean, you look at guys like Trier and Hawkins. look, they stayed around, and they're—I mean—more seasoned, more developed players than they are a year ago. Yeah. But their draft stock—you can make a very strong case. I think it's almost factual that both of their draft stocks were higher a year ago at this point than they are right now. And you—I mean—you look at guys like Brandon Ashley, who was in a similar situation, suffered a foot injury, came back, played a year, and then he didn't get drafted, did he?
No.
Yeah.
No,
so yeah, he went undrafted. So I mean, then you look at guys like Rondé, who could have gone, and all these players. It's just interesting because
held himself out.
Rondé absolutely did.
I think he was about the same. If he had left his freshman, he would have done the same. And Raleigh might be in that boat too. He might go down a little bit lower, but it depends how the spring goes. But I think he was high second, maybe early first last year if he had left, and it kind of looks like. Now I'm seeing them all over the map, you know, end of the first to the end of the second. And so I think maybe it depends on how he does this spring. But, you know, but again, both of those guys are more ready and more mature. But it's just a question of, you know, everybody knows they draft on upside. And so it's almost like when you come back to school, it's like a race. If you're going to come back, you better get better.
Yeah.
Because you're going to be older and you're going to be judged downward on being older. So you better improve that much more, you know.
Did Raleigh Alkins shrink? Because they measured him without shoes on, and he was 6'2", and I think it was 6'2½" or 6'2¾". Bruce, do you remember his measurements?
No, I don't have those in front of me. I know that the Tura, Raleigh actually grew.
Yeah, it was Raleigh who grew. Yeah,
he grew.
Yeah, I think Tura measured the same, and that's, you know, I was actually given because he's almost 21. I'm like, you're still growing? He said, you know, I guess some guys can grow until their early 20s. So he was banking on that. I mean, it doesn't make a whole lot of difference, but
eight is weed.
Yeah, well, no,
you know, he's a legit 6'5". He's a legit 6'4½", 6'5" with shoes, which is, you know, what he's been listed at Arizona. But he's, you know, and it's still on the smaller side, maybe for an NBA wing, but because of his uniqueness, his game, and the fact that he can, you know, he's pretty athletic and explosive for being as strong as he is. He tested pretty well today, too. I think that maybe that compensates for the height a little bit, too.
Raleigh Alkins, 5 months away from turning 21. Last year's combine, he was 6 feet, 2½ inches without shoes.
Yeah.
This year, he was 6 feet, 2.75 inches without shoes, so grew a quarter of an inch.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad at all.
Dropped his body fat from 11 to 8.9%, so...
Because I remember him saying out of the combine last year that the feedback he got last year was you need to get your body fat down and your shot needs to get better. And his shot's still kind of hit or miss, but he's, you know, that he's getting better at it and certainly, you know, the rest of his game... the rest of his offensive game is strong, and then defensively he's still got that potential, and I think that's a big question with Raleigh too, is how it's, you know, can he become an NBA defender.
Cool.
Bruce, just a couple more things here before we let you go in Chicago. Who stood out to you the most, not necessarily Wildcat, but who stood out to you the most at the combine the last few days, and between Schreuer and Alkins, who at this point, who's more likely to get drafted next month?
Well, you know, Don, it's tough for me to say who stood out the most because honestly, I can only watch flashes of the game because there's so many people to talk to and interviews going on at the same time, and you know it's just crazy like that. I do know that you know, one guy who wasn't in the game was Mohamed Bamba, and is the
pterodactyl,
the wingspan he has
7'10". Yeah,
7'10". I mean that's the number of the week for me anyway. I don't know, but I did. Of course, keep an eye on Alkins and Trier as much as I could, and you know, I think you know, as of right now, Alkins certainly is probably more draftable because he's younger, and again, the draft down potential, he's younger. They think he can do more things. He has potential to develop defensively, and you know, and in shooting, and I think. You know, he played really well today. He was much more aggressive and shot pretty well, 7 for 11, I think. And he actually blocked 5 shots, which is something, you know, something really jumped out at me too as well. So, you know, and I think if he continues to go on and impress some teams in private workouts over the next month or so, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he maybe sneaks into a late first round. That has happened. you know, with guys like that that are all the mocks have in the middle or the late second, and all of a sudden they pop up in the end of the first round. You know, it does happen.
All right, Bruce. Now, if I'm going to play NBA GM here real quick. This is, if I were to interview a player, this is the one question I'd ask them. Do you put ketchup on your fries, or do you put it on the side and dip your fries into the ketchup?
That probably work. It wouldn't surprise me if they have asked that in some form or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, but I'm asking.
I want to see like how aggressive you are, you know, and things like that. So,
but I'm asking. But I'm asking you, what would you do?
What would I do?
Yeah. You put ketchup on your fries, or do you dip your fries in ketchup?
If they're good fries, they don't need ketchup.
There you, my man, oh, Bruce. Man. I usually don't put ketchup on my fries. I like
it. Yeah, I usually don't. Yeah. Yeah, it's rare. In fact, honestly, yeah, if they're really bad, then I might have to do that.
Yeah.
No, wow, that's a good answer.
If I do use ketchup, though, I'm a dipper. Are you a dipper?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to dip, but yeah, no. I like that, Bruce. Not always first a ketchup guy.
I don't know if that would help me with an NBA team. But, no.
All right. Well, that's Bruce Pascoe out there in Chicago. You can follow him on Twitter at Bruce Pascoe. Bruce, thanks for hopping on the podcast.
No, thanks for having me. It's always fun, guys. Thanks.
Take care.
Okay.
All right. So we're both dippers, right?
I dip.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I dip French fries. I mean that's when I use ketchup. Like Bruce, I don't always, if I have some good fries, like In-N-Out fries, I don't necessarily, like if we're sitting in In-N-Out and I don't have Animal Styles in front of me and you're going to get ketchup, I'll ask you to get me some ketchup, but I'm not going to go out of my way and get ketchup for my fries that are good enough without ketchup.
Sure,
know?
Absolutely. Yellow light, you going or you?
Raleigh's answer is the right answer. I'm sorry, it is.
I'm going.
Look, there's not supposed to be a wrong or right answer to that question, but Raleigh got the right answer.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I'd go generally.
Cool. All right,
you gotta be close enough.
Depends on how close you are.
You put ketchup on your tacos?
No, that's
yeah, no
taco
pizza. I've seen it. Why is this? Is this like the Tide Pod thing now? Or just putting ketchup?
Crime.
Yeah, everyone's
that's a crime.
Putting ketchup on everything.
And by the way, it is Laurel. It is Laurel, not Yanni.
It is Laurel. Hey, shout out. We got Ryan Lopez does our graphics for us here at the Star and the Wildcaster. He's a Yanni guy, so we'll, you know, in-house today. But he's not a Laurel. So look, Justin and I think it's a conspiracy. We think that everyone who thinks it's Yanni is just on the out. They're
part of the Illuminati. Yeah, they're all trying to get us.
They know it's Laurel. They all got together and were like, "Hey,
Illuminati.
How do we mess with everyone who knows that this is Laurel?"
I love it. I love it. It is Laurel.
It is Laurel.
It is Laurel. Illuminati.
That's the right answer. Raleigh would say it's Laurel. They still gotta start asking that at the combine. That's gotta be a question. Yeah.
But anyways, that'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. And as always, download that Wildcaster app. Thanks for listening.